Today's show is brought to you in part by our partners at StableDuel. I keep saying we're going to be doing a lot more with them, and that's going to be happening next week. There'll be some more news about our partnership with StableDuel. But I want you to know, for this weekend, get involved. They've got a Del Mar Triple Up. That's a $100 buy-in game where you have an opportunity to turn that $100 into $300 with a solid finish, not necessarily a great finish. There's also a $500 bonus to the winner in that game. Triple Up, you triple up your entry, and the bringer will bring home that extra $500, can win a total of $800 in that one. There's also a free ride. So if you're looking to play StableDuel, you haven't played StableDuel yet, why not do it for free? They've got a Del Mar game. Both those Del Mar games on Saturday start at 3:30. Sign up for your StableDuel account via the StableDuel app today. Download the StableDuel app and sign up. And hey, send them a note. Tell them we sent you. StableDuel, a new breed of gaming is here. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is our show for Thursday, November 19th, recording a day early this week for various logistical reasons. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker. Once again, the Brooklyn Bunker that I have not left in, it's been 10 days of the 2 weeks? You lose all time when you're in quarantine, folks. But hopefully, I'll be able to rejoin the outside world in just a few days' time. But I have to say, the handicapping's gone pretty well trapped down here in the bunker. So maybe for the purposes of the listeners and viewers, I should just stay down here a little bit longer. Sorry, guys, I'm not going to do that. Really fun show today. We've got a cool weekend of racing. The next few weekends is actually more stuff than people remember, I feel like, in these weeks after the Breeders' Cup. Some interesting stuff, particularly up at Woodbine this weekend. We're going to lead off with that. We're going to talk about NYRA. We got some good stuff there. This NYRA November cards have been excellent with all the turf racing and lots of big full fields. Some of the best racing of the year in New York. We're going to bring back Mac Valvolgi to talk about that after our success last week. And then John Pinder, who we haven't caught up with since the Breeders' Cup, is going to be back with us to talk about Del Mar. And we're going to get right to it after this first break where we're going to talk about one of our partners. Today's show brought to you in part by our founding partners, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. I was tickled to see how close to our annual goal of $20,000 we are. Help us get there. Go to trfinc.org/players and make a donation today. TRF doing great work finding homes for racehorses, helping humans as well through the Second Chances program. Help us get to our goal at trfinc.org/players. PTF back with you. Happy to be joined by our Woodbine correspondent. He's coming to us from the Chicagoland area. He is ITM's business manager and expected father, from what I understand. Drew Cotney, what's going on, Drew? What are the vibes like in your domicile at the moment?
They are full-blown baby ready here. First child on its way. Thanksgiving, the due date. I actually have a question for you here. As a drinking connoisseur yourself, of all things.
Let me just stop you right there and say you're thinking about this the right way if you're the segue from the newborn baby is booze, because you're going to need plenty of it. But okay, so what is your question?
So we're trying to be COVID safe, so I only go out maybe once a week. Heading to Binny's, a local big liquor store.
Sure, I've heard of Binny's.
And I've been making cocktails with Evan Williams, the half gallon, just from a price value standpoint.
Yeah, great value in that juice, for sure.
And Evan Williams bottled and bond, the 100 proof. It brings a little bit more gumption to the drink. What should I go get today? Because I want something different in that price point.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm not that up. I mean, the Evan Williams is pretty well priced. So I would go for, I don't know everything at that price point really well. Like, honestly, at that price point, I think I'd say Evan Williams. But one thing I like, it's definitely more expensive than that. But if you're looking for something that you won't feel like too guilty mixing in a cocktail, it's definitely going to cost, it might cost three times what Evan Williams costs a bottle. But the first thing that just popped in my head to recommend is Maker's Cask Strength. I just feel like that drinks it drinks like a much more expensive whiskey than it is. But I don't know. I'm sure there are other really interesting lower price point bourbons that like you can probably get in Illinois that I can't even get here. You know, like Dant and things like that. But I don't know them enough to even recommend them. It's a little too specific of a question for me to fully deliver on. But
hey, that's fine. Because I'm with you. It's hit the bourbon craze has hit Chicago full blown. So I go down to Texas in the middle of nowhere, and they have half gallons of most all kind of Wellers you could imagine just sitting out for $30, $50, right? So I understand what you're saying. Like if that was an option, that's my go-to. So you have to understand the market. I completely get it. So we'll probably go that route there with the cask strength.
Buy all that Weller you can, by the way. That's good stuff for that at that price point, and a little crazy for what you have to pay for it anyway.
Right.
I did not have 5 minute side conversation on bourbon in today's show notes, but I don't think listeners will mind too much. Hopefully plenty of folks out there are enjoying our In the Money American Malt Whiskey. I'm not even sure if we have any left. If you are interested in getting a bottle of that, honestly, at this point, I think you should probably be making donations anyway to the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. So if folks want to make their donation to TRF and hopefully they'll get lucky and the bottle will be the bottle of gold at the end of their rainbow, if they're kind enough to do that. TRFinc.org/players. But all right, enough messing around. Let's dive into these races. This is a cool sequence, Drew. We've got three stakes races and some very big names. I'm curious to know if you are going with some of the more logical ones here or coming up with anything particularly clever. Let's start off talking about race number 8, the Ontario Derby. This is the rubber match, as it were, between Belichick and Mighty Heart. We've seen Daisuke Fukumoto not back on Mighty Heart, perhaps a referendum on the crazy early fractions that were cut out in the Breeder Stakes the last time. Seems a little harsh given the previous success that they'd had, but oh well, that's racing. I'm a huge Belichick fan, and you know, part of the reason I like Belichick so much last time is I did think that he was suited to the 12 furlongs on the grass more so than, say, 9 furlongs on the synthetic. But I just think he's gotten so good and he's so talented and he appears to continue to be working so well. I'm tempted to just side with him right back here and think that the 5-2 would be okay. I'm certainly open to other ideas though. What did you come up with in the Ontario Derby?
I love this because I'm on Mighty Heart. Have you ever seen a time form early fraction in the 200s? I don't think I have. So I think with the jockey change, this one's proven to run well and early. I don't know if there's going to be a ton of pace pressure in here either. Field pass looks like maybe, and we can talk about that one in a bit. But I'm going back with the right distance, and I go back to what Josie Carroll said when being interviewed on this horse on the Triple Crown Trail in Canada, that the Tapita woke this one up, coming up from Fairgrounds, got in the Tapita and really loved it. So last out, maybe the wrong surface, doesn't love turf as much as that Tapita, and set insane fractions. So we're crossing a line through that. I think this one gets loose. And if we get 7-2, 4-1 with field pass being in here, that's pretty good value in my book.
I think Mighty Heart's going to be shorter than that 7-2. But I don't know. I guess it's tough because there's a lot of horses who could catch money in this race. It's a very cogent case for Mighty Heart and would have to be on any short list. And at the end of the day, it'll come down to price. I just sort of decided to stick with a horse I like in Belichick. What do you think about field pass in this spot? I mean, obviously in very good hands and certainly fits on the best form. I'm leaning more towards either Mighty Heart or Belichick than this one, though. Am I underestimating the maker training?
I don't think so. This group that this horse has been running against with Fancy Liquor and Domestic Spending and Bama Breeze and Bye Bye Melvin, all of these just seem to be that like grade 3 duking it out. Everyone beats everyone else sometimes. And the campaign's been long for this one. And then coming up to Woodbine on the Tapita just kind of feels like, let's see if we can get lucky up here, ship this one north and see what happens. I think this one's going to take a lot of money for us, even though I do tend to see Woodbine favors the homers a little bit more in terms of money in the pools. But I think people are going to see those numbers like Fancy Liquor winning on Derby Day and they're going to remember that and say, hey, that's a good horse, I thought. And I think we're going to get good value on the R2 that we like, because that one's going to take some. But I do have a creative idea, though, but I do want to hear what you have to say about this one, too, Field Pass, the number one.
I think you're right about Field Pass catching a lot of extra cash, not least because that last synthetic race was so impressive in theory, being a race on the Derby trail and being a grade three in the old Jeff Ruby Stakes there at Turfway. And I'm just not sure trip-wise, Field Pass has shown some nice versatility. On pace figures, you could make a case that he might be on up or near the lead. I don't imagine they're going to want Mighty Heart to go to the lead after what happened the last day. Part of the problem I'm having with this race and being more definitive about it is I do not have the clearest sense of exactly how it's going to play out, but I do know I'm going to want some Belichick and some Mighty Heart. Who's your price in here?
Yeah, I like the number seven, Dune of Palat, the French bred, who's done really good things on Poly over in Ireland and Great Britain. I don't know if it's Poly Tapita, what they run over, some sort of synthetic at those tracks. So it's done well over there. And the Keeneland replay, the inside favored the horses so much so on that track. You could see the outside even clots coming up where those outside horses, even around the first turn, are struggling to carry on. Let a 35-1 shot get the rail all the way around and finish a close third. That's an automatic sign in my book that the rail horses should be downgraded and those traveling on the outside against the flow should be upgraded. You're not going to see this in the trip notes. The last 16th got tripped up. I don't know how it didn't make the trip notes and still ran a good third against the pace flow. And again, I know the time form is showing red coated fractions, but just how the finishers finished, you saw a lot of the ones on the front end, including that 35-1, finish on well, and the back horses were struggling to make up ground. So that's what I mean by against the pace flow. You have to look at the replay to make that determination if you believe the time form numbers and this one got a setup, or if the race unfolded that way. So number seven, at 20-1, you're going to get a heck of a price because of the three others we've already talked about today.
Yeah, so, that's not nuts. You only said one thing that didn't make any sense to me. The horse did not finish third. Did you mean beaten three lengths or something?
That's correct. I'm looking at beaten three lengths and a quarter. So thank you for clarifying.
That would have been quite a mistake in the chart. I can't argue with any of that. It's Fiber Sand at Southwell. And in, I think, Dundalk, I think it's Poly. I actually don't know. But it's the fact that a horse has run over multiple different synthetic surfaces. I mean, that's a good case. And it's interesting to see that despite being seven lengths off last time going long on the turf, that on pace figures, this one is positioned third, according to Timeform US. I can absolutely see that one hanging around for a piece for Brendan Walsh, a trainer that I trust. I'm going to stick with Belichick. Drew likes Mighty Heart and Dune of Pilat. Is that it? Dune of Pilat, the seven. Six and seven for Drew, two for me in the Ontario Derby. Let's move on to race number nine, the grade two Kennedy Road. Are you gonna get egg on your face by picking against Pink Lloyd again here, Drew, or have you finally learned your lesson?
I feel like
Canada's best sprinter, he goes so well fresh. He's won this race, I think, twice. He's gonna get a great trip. Everything was laid out for Silent Poet to win last time. I think it's the Pink Lloyd show, and I honestly don't have much else to say.
Right. Yeah. Everything you've said is exactly what I believe. The thing that Silent Poet got a great setup last time, getting the slow fractions and had plenty left in the tank when they turned for home. The only interesting one, and I'll go back to it, and I'm not putting this one on top like I did last time, but the number six, Roaring Forties, you go back. The annual debut, so August 15th, the first start of the year 2020, came out and tried to tangle with Pink Lloyd after a 8-month layoff. Didn't go so well. Then comes back, tries to duel with Pink Lloyd from a wide post draw. Travels wide. Doesn't turn out so well. Then stretches out. That's too far. And they come back today as the, I'm guessing, the last start of this year, maybe one more start. So I think this is all systems go. This is a kitchen sink type of race. Let's throw everything we got at this and see if we can't get the win. And knowing that there's not a ton of speed drawn to the inside has me interested. This one, I'm curious to see if it gets to the lead, because you think that they know they can't sit back and wait for the pace to unfold, because Pink Lloyd's going to have that one over a barrel. There's plenty of others I would prefer to be stalkers in this. So if you see number six, Roaring Forties, go to the lead, that one might not stop for us.
Interesting. I mean, I think Silent Poet's only chance is to go to the lead against Pink Lloyd. So I don't know that you're going to get that trip. But I mean, hey, at 20-1, I don't hate. I wouldn't talk you out of trying to take a chance. But I think at the end of the day, Pink Lloyd for me is just going to be a free square in all the late picks at Woodbine on Saturday. With that, let's move on to race number 10. It's the Grade 2 Bessarabian. We've got a field of 8 going 7 furlongs on the synthetic. Drew, we'll let you kick this one off. What did you come up with?
I'm trying to see if Ellen J. Foxwoods has responded back to my tweet because I have loved Boardroom since the September 12th start. Broke the equipment, still tried to get the win, and then came back and did it so professionally. This one, if we get 10-1, we may be looking at mortgage-type money going on this one. Just because I think this is going to be a perfect setup. There's speed all around. This one can sit back off of it. And I don't think they've even gotten close to the bottom of the tank on this one. So the number two, Boardroom, morning line 10-1. I don't know if we'll get that, but I think this one's a real dangerous threat at the price we're seeing.
She's very talented, no doubt about it, but this is just a much tougher group than anything that she's faced so far. So I do want her involved. I definitely have her as one of my backups. The other question is, just looking at pace figures, she's going to have an awful lot of work to do. I came around to Jakarta in this spot for Maker, a trainer I trust when it comes to switching around surfaces, and just look to me on Timeform US, and just as I designed the race in my head, like she might be absolutely loose in this spot. And I felt like maybe the 6-1 is a little high, the morning line, but seemed like a horse that should be all of at least 4-1 and might be worth the shot. It's interesting that neither of us landed on either of the favorites in here, Super Escape or Painting. Did you want to have either of those on side, or were you more actively trying to oppose?
Yeah, I see these races after like following Woodbine so well this year, you see these type of horses that it's just, They're tweeners. You don't know whether or not to leave them on or leave them off. You kind of like them, you kind of don't. And they always end up winning a short price. And you're like, why didn't I have that one on my tickets? So I'm going to have to spend a little bit more time. I think Super Escape is going to get a little bit too much pace pressure here. And it's so dependent on the break. So that doesn't have me excited, because if the break is blown, this one's over. And then Painting, I think, could stalk, and the 7 furlongs may help. But you look back, and it keeps getting set up. So neither short price has me excited, and that's why I have no idea where the actual pool money is going to go in this event. Who do you think goes off favorite?
That's a good question. I mean, Super Escape, maybe, who I do prefer to Painting. The morning line has it the other way around, though, with Painting at 2-1 and Super Escape at 3-1. But I mean, both of them make a ton of sense. It's an open looking race. I mean, I suppose you could make a case for Amalfi Coast coming off the last race too, doing something very similar and beating both Super Escape and Painting. So I'm guessing that the favorite will come from that group of three.
Yeah, that's fair. One value play I wanted to say from an underneath perspective, our secret agent, I think, knows her position in this race, that Gary Barber and Cassie are going to have this one stay off of the pace, not get involved in that insane inside pace that we're going to see with those types from your horse all the way down to mine. I feel like that's going to be some pace. Gets to watch it unfold under Hernandez. For the first time, Hernandez gets aboard based on what I'm seeing here on my PPs. And that one could get up at a price if the pace gets so catastrophic that some just start to wilt away and pack it in for another day. You might get some value there. So look out for number 7, our secret agent, to make a move. I don't know good enough to be able to jump up on top, but a second or third, maybe a reverse key in thirds, looks like a reasonable position for this one.
All right. So Drew looking for our secret agent to beat somewhere. Loves Boardroom, hoping for all of that 10-1, the 2. I like Jakarta, the 6, looking to back up with Boardroom, the 2, and Super Escape, the 1. And with that, we will move on to our finale. We've got 10 dime maiden claimers, 3 and up, going 7 furlongs on the synthetic. And I like the horse in here, the 11 Final Strike, going out first time as a gelding. Solid form coming out of the last race, I thought should be well positioned in the top half of the field. and just looking at closing sectionals, had some solid numbers as well. I think I said number 11 final strike. That would be number 10 final strike. If folks are writing down numbers, make sure not to get that one wrong. The final strike is the one that I'm interested in the nightcap. But I'll ask you, Drew, how are we going to get paid?
Yeah, I like final strike too, the number 10. Greece and Gelding, and I like to see the strong work that comes back from that effort. So you see the November 1st strong workout and then the Gelding. Those two things tend to be a good recipe. I kind of lean towards a little bit of a logical number 3, Candy's Dream. That's my pick here. Just a simple class play is going to have the speed. And sometimes just being on the lead is enough to win a race in these type of events where we know horses don't love to pass too much. So I'm not jumping up and down to go bet this race. Let's put it that way, because I think you could make a consideration for any of these, including Romeo's Law, number 9, 30-1. Show good speed, blinkers on today, gets the cutback. I don't think we'll see 30-1, but if you do, I mean, heck, that might be a good across the board bet just to put $5 to have something to root in the nightcap. Because this one looks live. Trainer a little cold, but in these dime clamor spots, I'm not too worried about trainer stats in that regard.
I'll underline your Candy's Dream case a little bit, just in the fact that I think people can get fatigue with these runners who are over 13, but this really is the weakest group that she's faced by a whole lot. And when you put pace and dropping together like that, I could definitely see her having a say from the outcome in the outcome from the get-go. That's what I'm trying to say here about the number 3, Candy's Dream. In the nightcap, I'm sticking with my top pick, who, as I said before, is number 10, Final Strike. I feel like the big one, the Ontario Derby, which is the grade 3, the others are grade 2s, but as people who followed Woodbine all year, this feels like the one I want to call the big one. I feel like we should just do our head-to-head here with me with Belichick and you with Mighty Heart once again. What do you think?
Well, straight up.
Let's do it.
They're going to be really darn close on these pools in the wind pool. I wouldn't be surprised if we see the tote board flashes go back and forth. But Field Pass just puts that wild card in there. So the believers are going to get paid as well.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can get our picks started off nicely here. I mean, for me, it's 2 by 1 by, you know, maybe by 1 with a couple of backups. And then probably spread in the last race, pressing the ones we talked about. So it's a very approachable pick 4 sequence. The money has been, the pools have been strong at Woodbine. I expect that'll be the case once again with all the graded stakes action. Folks should definitely check it out. Really been enjoying following Woodbine all year. We're going to follow them through the end of the meet, which goes through the middle of December, and already excited about having them back next year. And maybe, just maybe, even getting a chance to go up there and visit, God willing, and the creek don't rest. Drew Cotney, I know you've got a lot going on in your life. We'll touch base off air. Hopefully we'll be able to have you back on these airwaves soon. Maybe, who knows, this may be your last on-air appearance for a minute, but we'll play that by ear, and we'll look for you on Twitter and elsewhere. Godspeed, my friend.
I love it. Yeah, don't forget to check out the blog post as well for Woodbine, the late pick 4 write-ups over at In the Money Podcast. We are trying to do the Saturday a day early, and then life stuff just gets in the way. Sunday's typically the morning of. So look out for those on Twitter. You can find those over on the website as well.
That's a good idea. InTheMoneyPodcast.com for that. Folks looking to build, especially those last two legs of the tickets, as Drew digs more, he may have a couple of others we want to throw in as backups or maybe even press. Drew Cotney, thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah, take care.
Just a reminder that you can get more picks from the likes of me and JK and other In the Money regulars like Ashley Mayu and Nick Tamaro via the Twin Spires Expert Picks program. If you go to twinspires.com or use the Twin Spires app and go to a race that has one of the experts making picks, you click on the little button, we appear, we tell you what we think is going to happen. I've been doing okay. I know JK has been on a roll as well. Get more of our stuff at twinspires.com or via the Twin Spires app. Next up on the show, happy to have him back after he helped plenty of viewers hit the late pick 5 at Aqueduct last weekend. Seeing if we can go one better again this weekend. Horse player Matt Vagvolgi. Matt, how are you?
Doing well, Pete. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I like this. When we get on these rolls, We keep you in the hot seat for a couple of weeks in a row, and we'll see. We'll see if this is another week where we have as much agreement as we did last week. I take it you were able to make a little bit of hay out of that last weekend.
Yeah. Made a few bucks last weekend off the pick five. Couldn't get our key horses home. One I needed for the pick five, one I needed for the Nyer contest, but that's the way it goes. But we still walked out of there with a nice win and, $1,200-1,300 of the good.
I did hear you get a nice shout out from Mr. Kinchin on the Fox broadcast when your name was up there for a minute. Do you typically play in those Nyer cash contests every weekend?
I try to play if I'm able to play. I do. I used to have a rule where if the buy-in was at a certain level and I really didn't have the time and I knew I didn't have the time, I wouldn't play. And I've kind of stuck to that. So not every weekend. Here's why I think those are great. If you're looking to get into tournaments like the BCBC, right, which I'm sure a lot of you, if you haven't played in these types of tournaments, you heard a lot about, right, a lot of excitement around it. There's big money on the line. I think these are great tournaments to test yourself. The buy-in is not huge. I know different budgets are for, you know, different people, but for me, Pete, honestly, I use a lot of those Nyer tournaments on, now they're on Saturday, Saratoga, they're on Sundays, they're on Saturdays now in at Aqueduct. I use them as almost training. I try different things. You know, I don't play a certain bet a lot in tournaments. I want to try that, right? Or if I want to try this particular bet or this particular strategy. So it's not like I want to throw money away. And always the common thought is, well, Matt, just do that, you know, with fake money. It's not the same thing.
Right.
It just isn't. And especially if you build up a bankroll to make a big play, I just feel like having the real money on the line is where you're really going to test yourself to make those decisions. So I think it's a good training ground. And I think they're fun. They're great tournaments.
I love that idea of developing that muscle memory when it's time to go all in, when it's time to efficiently craft that wager that reflects your opinion. That's going to get you to the number you think is going to win. It's one thing to do that on paper, but to do it in the context of a contest like those, I think that's going to be a lot more valuable. But we're not here to talk about contests. We're going to talk about this Saturday late pick five. It kicks off with race number six. We've got a two-year-old maiden going a mile and a 16th for the fillies on the green. And how are we going to get this thing kicked off? It looked like there were a couple of logicals at the top of the market. I'm curious if you landed on them or in a different direction.
I mean, I think there's a key logical, and you probably know where I'm going to go here. But, you know, looking at the eight, Freedom of Press, Ortiz, Brown, it's going to take money. I get it. But that was I thought that was a nice run first out. I really thought that was an impressive run. Just missed. I think that same type of run here against this group, I think we'll get the job done. Should sit that nice stalking trip off of horses I feel that are inferior in this field. I think, you know, the six is a little bit interesting towards the front end. You may get a little bit of a price there, 9-2 in the morning line, but I thought that, Freedom of the Press, I thought was a logical horse to use, can improve big time second time out. You know, there were a couple horses that I would play around with. I think the seven tick, 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 boom is a little bit interesting. I think it's gotten better each start. Caught soft ground last time, so you know should get some firmer ground. I thought that horse would be a little bit interesting at a price, but I think you can go a few different directions here. But I thought that the eight Freedom of the Press for me was probably a lone A. I may make change on that, but that's probably a horse I'm going to lean on quite a bit here.
The two I wanted were the first two you mentioned. Freedom of the Press needs to be in there. But actually, I think in my picks, I might even make the six EV Jets my top pick, hoping that 9-2 of the morning line comes to fruition. Probably, almost certainly, a little bit less likely a winner than the eight. But I like the fact that she had the big run routing on debut. Never easy to win routing on debut. Did get a little bit of a setup there, but then I feel like the sharpener going six, now stretching back out, should have that tactical speed, should be positioned in front of the eight. Six and the eight were all I really needed. And then I was maybe thinking of including the four as a backup, White Frost, who does have a little speed. There is grass on both sides of this pedigree. And I always like it when they're bet as strongly as this one was the last day, just as a suggestion of talent. I think that effort in the mud, now getting onto the turf, that can be excused. I probably will want White Frost as a B somewhere. But I think, you know, largely see race number six in a pretty similar fashion. And with that, we'll move on to race number seven. We've got $30,000 claimers, three and up, colts, and colts, horses, geldings, all that good stuff. Going a mile and a 16th on the turf here. Weather forecast looks good heading in. I went back and forth on this race a bit. I'm going to make you kick this one off too.
No, I again, it's a theme going so far here, looking at the Ortiz-Brown connection, which has been a little cold. But, you know, I just think on a pure pace perspective, again, I'm in agreement with Timeform in terms of this horse just being able to get to the lead, control this pace. I don't really see any other horse going with traffic pattern, the nine. I would normally, when I see this type of horse, I'm trying to beat it. And I'm going horse by horse by horse. And I just don't see it. I just, again, maybe you have a better opinion at a price, but I just think this horse can get out to the front, control the pace. I don't think it's much pressure. And I think it's going to be one of those races where if you're against them, you're screaming at the TV, press, somebody go after this horse, please, somebody pressure. You know, and I just don't think that you see it. You know, the other horse, I guess you can say is interesting for me is the eight B-catcher. But I just think comes from the clouds every time. I just don't. It's one of those, again, it's a get you out of your seat kind of horse in the stretch of like, I think we got it. And then just run out of track. So I like that horse a lot. I just don't think that on a pace perspective is going to have enough to get it done. And I think that the nine traffic pattern just really, it's a merry-go-round race from start to finish.
Traffic pattern will be on all my tickets. This is where I started. But the more I looked at the race, I could build a case for the six hard count. And the key is more or less ignoring the last two runs sprinting, one on the dirt, and going back to those turf routes. And I feel like if he shows that amount of tactical speed, he can be a bit closer to the nine than the pace projector is suggesting. And traffic pattern is just one of these horses, for all the reasons you said, should have this race served up on a silver platter. And believe me, I need everywhere. But I just don't think it's been very visually impressive. Runs like a horse to me that would be capable of throwing away a race if given half a chance. I feel like hard count is the only one, though, that I can see taking advantage of this. I want to play this 6-9 and just try to get through it. Can you see a hard count at all in here?
Yeah, no, and I can definitely see that horse being a player here. And like you said, being tactical, you know, coming from off of it, laying a bit close, playing the break a little bit. The only problem that I have is that I see this story so many times of like, okay, maybe this horse will show some more pace and get a little bit more into the race. And then a horse, you know, like traffic pattern just kind of takes them all the way around. So I would say not a stone cold, you know, going 100% with him. I just felt like the race sets up for this horse. Has gotten pressured, not the last race, but two races prior has really gotten pressured up front and gave way. I don't think we see that today. And to be honest with you, I think those last two races are against very similar company today. So I just think really on a pace perspective can take this thing from start to finish. But I think the six can certainly lay close and certainly be a factor.
Let's talk about the linchpin of this pick five. It's race number eight, a three and up New York bred allowance race. We've got a field of nine going postward in this spot. And who did I come up with in this race? I lost my place on the form here. This was another one where I ended up on the favorite, but I'm very curious to see if you think maybe there's a way we can get a little bit more creative. I just felt like Saratoga Pal has shown enough versatility in terms of different setups and different distances. Just at the end of the day, it was a form and figure play who I thought would be rolling late. And I definitely don't want to stand alone with Saratoga Pal, but there'll be plenty of Saratoga Pal on my tickets. Who did you come up with?
Yeah, I agree. I think you do have to have Saratoga Pal in the mix, but doesn't have to be, you know, the race doesn't have to stop there. You know, I thought, was it Gemography, the five, again, we're looking at Finger Lakes form. I get it. When you look at the past performances, but if you look at that, I think that last race was really competitive. I thought this horse really competed at a fairly big price at 13-1. I like Alvarado on this horse, and I think we'll put him in play and may get the jump on Saratoga Pal. I think that's the key, I think, for using this horse, is that I think there's talent there. I think it'll get dismissed. You'll certainly get a little bit of a price, and I think we'll lay a little bit closer to this pace where, you know, Saratoga Pal, I think, is going to come from a little bit more off of it. So I did like the five a little bit. You're right, though, with Saratoga Pal. I think this horse is going to get beat up in the odds. I don't know. Do you think 8-5 you'll get, or do you think you'll get lower than that?
I'm hoping, because of the pace scenario or lack thereof, in other words, this horse has to be positioned towards the back, that maybe you will get all of the 8-5. But it's one of those things that depends on how in the different figures the horse comes up. And if the horse is as much of a standout on like the sheets or whatever, then it could get a little silly. So it's hard to know. And it's one of the reasons why I don't hate the idea of having some backups. Gemography definitely makes sense for the reasons you said. A horse that ran in that same race and was nowhere, but if you key off the previous form, I think I want to get your opinion on. What about Ryken as potentially being the best of speed? If you sort of ignore the last race where the horse didn't have the easiest go of things early on and folded up 10, but based on the previous form and being like the best drawn outside speed, I could see Ryken having a say at a price potentially.
Yeah, I agree. I think we got to go back a little bit in form. You're right. If we can get that form back, I think this horse can step out, go to the lead, and take it all the way. Just some stats I've been playing around with sprints, specifically at Aqueduct. Not saying that speed can't win. It's optimal to be off the rail and having that stalking position with a really strong late pace figure. And I think that's what circled me back around to the five Gemography because of that. Should sit close. And just to give you the numbers on that stat, so the idea is, you know, no more than or no less than 3 lengths off the pace with the best late pace figure in sprints, specifically at Aqueduct, 195 races, 32% winners, and a 15% positive ROI there. So those are numbers I like to really dig in. Like, I look more on a broad base and I really start to zero in on them. And that's one that's starting to jump off the table at me a bit, looking at the recency of that too, with when this meet has started. So that kind of pushed me in that direction. But again, yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't think the four, the Revenger is good enough to stay with Ryken. So I think that also helps the eight out as well. But yeah, I mean, I think you can go a few different directions here, but for me, I would say that the five and the seven for me, and then I would definitely include the eight as well.
That stat does push me more in the direction of just going 5 and 7 and hoping for the best. Let's talk about the feature, Matt. Race number 9 is the Grade 3 Red Smith, returned to the races of Sadler's Joy, won this race last year, loves it around Aqueduct, should have enough late pace, I would think, to set up the late kick. And I love how well Rosario fits this horse. I don't think I want to stand alone, and I feel like Aquaphobia might be a logical partner in your horizontals. Maybe doesn't like the full 12 furlongs and maybe has a chance to be best of speed here. So I was thinking maybe you can get out of this with Sadler's Joy and then Aquaphobia as a backup. How did you see the Red Smith?
Yeah, I think Sadler's Joy, class of the class, I think here. Will always be in my heart for one of my favorite disqualifications in my life, which we've talked on these airwaves before, for a boatload of money, but we'll let that slide. But I think one of the key things you said, Pete, is how well Rosario, I think, fits this horse. And I think that's a key. I've said this a million times. I don't think there's a better clock in any jockey's brain than Joel Rosario. And I think that's where this race really comes down to. I think the class will show. I think putting this horse in the right place, you've got Rosario to do that. So Sadler's Joy for me is definitely going to be a key horse to use in the sequence. I thought Red Knight was a little interesting as well. I know not it's the Sycamore is a you know common race in this field here, but I thought that was pretty impressive. I just that late kick, it was really nice to see. You know, coming third off the layoff, I think this horse can get better. So I like to use Red Knight a bit in here as well.
I could see that for sure. Career form, good horse, third race off the long layoff. My original thought was if it's a closer, it's going to be Sadler's Joy, but that's a little reductive. I mean, Red Knight definitely makes sense.
Yeah, and one I'll throw a little, like a fuzzy horse I'll throw out there too is the 5 North Dakota. Watch that race. It got completely shut off in the Sycamore and just it tried to get out, hit the fence, came back out again and ran. And I think that's pretty impressive for a horse to take kind of a beating in the stretch like that, to really show some talent late. So I thought that was a horse I may include as a B. I'm not sure, but I think we've touched on the key players that I think that'll be, and I think you would do as well. But I thought that was one that was interesting that may get lost in the running lines of that particular race. If you really go back and watch, I watched it a few times, I just thought that horse had a horrible, horrible trip.
Yeah, it's a good observation. I was just worried about if using that one, thinking I might have to use all the 3 that finished ahead, but that's not necessarily the case. You can always try to cherry pick value, or maybe you have one spread combo where you do use everything coming out of that race and just get very skinny in the other leg. So I am glad you mentioned that one. Should be certainly a double digit price, if not even closer to 15 or 20 to 1, I would think. We'll see though. Sometimes those bounce off the rail trips tend to attract a little extra money.
Yeah, I hope not, but I also hope they go the other way and they're just looking at the running line. They're just taking a quick peek at that. Well, like you said, in a race that's been beaten by 3 other horses, what's any different today? Well, you know, looks like we'll have to run a career best. That's where I start. When you look watching the races, I think you start to formulate maybe a different idea sometimes. And it's more so how the horse responded after all that trouble happened, which makes me interesting. And then I think is the reason why I think we get a little bit of a nice price here.
Let's move on to our nightcap. We've got 3 and up New York bred maiden claimers for 40,000 going 1 mile and 1/16 on the turf. I kind of like a horse in here, and it's really a process of elimination type play because we've got so many exposed runners. And then you've got the 3 Empire Express, who has only run on turf once against much better. So now is getting on to the turf for the first time as a gelding, for the first time in a claimer, has shown tactical speed. I feel like that 8-1 of the morning line might not be real in the win pool, but I think it should preserve a little bit of value in a bet like the pick 5. I like Empire Express to close things out here at Aqueduct on Saturday night. But Matt, I'll ask you, how are we going to get paid?
You're stealing it from me. It's like you've got my notes. You stole my notes here. You're cheating me off me on the test. No, for everything you said, I don't know if we strongly like this horse, if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Usually in these pick 5s, it's a good thing for us.
When we've agreed, on a lot of times when I agree with people, for whatever reason, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We have consistently done well when we've agreed.
Yeah, and I think it's a combination of me not liking the morning line favorite, albeit lukewarm on the 6. What's that? Brico,
who's actually the second choice at 5-2, Michael's Bad Boy.
Oh, Michael's Bad Boy. That's right. Yep. And I just, you know what, even Michael's Bad Boy too. Yes, I think this horse fits this field. I think it's a logical favorite. We'll probably go off as the favorite in this race. I thought the 6 also would attract some money. I just don't like the fact you look at 4 straight races of short prices and just not getting it done, albeit by a neck, by a head, 2¾ or 3¼ lengths in it, but just not quite getting there. I think that's becoming sort of a repetitive process. So, you know, that seems to be a little bit of torching money. So I started there and kind of and fanned out. And that's where I came up with the same horse you did. And I love a horse that, you know, tried something and, you know, I thought ran very well. Again, another race you should go back and watch is that first turf effort out at Aqueduct. This horse got, it was like bumper cars out there from the very beginning of this race or on the back stretch and then into the lane as well. This horse started to really gain some momentum and start to move. Got hit hard and almost knocked sideways and still came on to run and to grab that 4. So that wasn't a clunk up 4th. That was a very good effort. And if you really watch that race, it got bumped around quite a bit. So, you know, for all the things that you said there, Pete, I think second time back on the turf, I think is great. Second time out as a gelding. So I like this horse a lot. I do. I'm curious. And I also agree too. This is a great way to try to hide what I call hide in the picks, where you think a horse is going to be much less than that morning line, you know, key some bets off it. Try to get live to this horse. You'll certainly get some value in terms of equity in a bet like the pick 5 with closer to that, I think that morning line than you would maybe in the live odds.
Good stuff, Matt. Hopefully we'll be right about Empire Express and we can make some noise in this Aqueduct late pick five on Saturday. Thanks very much. If we hit it again, we'll have to bring you back next week. We'll just keep it rocking and rolling. Thank you very much for your time today. And I look forward to chatting with you again soon. Want to give a quick shout out to our friends at Mill Ridge Farm. Was very happy to get a chance to visit with Price Bell when I was down there at the Breeders' Cup. Mill Ridge Farm, they've been in this business a long time. 35 grade one winners have passed through there since the year 2000, and they're very interested in building a bridge between horsemen and horse players. If you've got questions about getting involved in the thoroughbred racing business, check out Mill Ridge Farm. You can do it at their website, or you can check them out on Facebook, social media, whatever questions you have about getting involved in the thoroughbred racing business, Mill Ridge Farm are there to help. All right, we're going to wrap things up, bringing back a friend of the show, looking like he's ready to call in some plays from the sideline, horse player John Pinder. John, how are you today?
I'm doing great. PTF, how are you?
I'm doing very well myself. Excited to talk a little Del Mar with you in a minute, but I was one of the many people who really enjoyed your contributions to the Breeders' Cup Premium Package. We haven't really gotten a chance to talk since the Breeders' Cup. Just wanted to check in on you. How did you end up doing those 2 days at Keeneland last weekend?
I was excited and worn out. It was a lot of work. It was fun. I felt like I got to flex my handicapping muscle doing all those work. On those great horses. I mean, it's one thing to go through, you know, a card at, you know, Aqueduct or, you know, any other track in the day of the week. But when you've got, you know, 16, 17 true contenders and 14 races, that's a lot. So it was good. I enjoyed it.
Did all the hard work translate to any success at the betting windows? How did you end up doing?
It did a little bit. The latter part of the card, I was all in on Monomore Girl and kind of parlayed it from there. I was surprised that Authentic wasn't getting any respect at the windows. So when I saw that, I put everything I had left on him and he got the job done. So turned out okay.
All's well that ends well. Well, good stuff. We appreciated those contributions. We hope, you know, throughout this winter and next year, we'll find some more good stuff for you to be writing over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. Just on behalf of all the listeners and the readers of that stuff, wanted to thank you for doing a very good job. But we're not here to talk about Keeneland and the Breeders' Cup. We're here to talk about this Del Mar late pick four on Saturday. And we're going to start off looking at race number six. We've got a two-year-old maiden for fillies going 6.5 on the dirt. How were you looking to kick off this pick four?
This, Pete, it's a little tricky here. I want to get to, of course, it's they're maidens and they're two-year-olds, so there's not a lot of history to go back and try and pick out through the form. I came up with number seven and number six are going to be my top keys. Peachtree Road. Mike Smith and his capable hands. She's coming off of a little bit of a layoff, but her first race looked like she wanted to really get the job done, and she impeded another runner. And of course, Princess Noir was in that race. So I think when Mike saw that he wasn't going to get to her, he eased off the gas, and you know, was it the great horseman that he is. So I think she's due and probably set up for a good race. Also, again, the number six, Exotic West for Bob Baffert. Pedigree's outstanding, and looks like from her works that she's putting in 4 and 47, she looks like she's ready to fire as well. So those will be my top two, and then the number one, Lay Marie is cutting back in distance. So she's don't know if she's quite good enough, but I don't want to get bit beat by her if she is. So she'd be a B for me here in this spot.
I definitely like Leia Marie. I was actually going to go ahead and make her my top pick based on that East Coast dirt form. You know, the final figure, a little light from the last run, but she did make a move into the hot pace. It may have also been too far, as you were pointing out with the cutback. And just my feelings on the division in California are well known. I upset lots of West Coast fans when I was going on and on about how Princess Nora wasn't fast enough to win a maiden at Saratoga. So even though I agree with you that Peachtree Road makes sense, I will stubbornly stick to my anti the form we've seen on the West Coast bias and lean towards Leia Marie coming from the East Coast. And I'm totally with you on Exotic West. Just everything looks obvious about that one, has to be included. So I'll play at 1-6. You'll play at 7-6-1. And I think we can get through that first leg. So let's move on to race number 7. We've got a 3-and-up starter allowance going 5 furlongs on the Del Mar turf. And this is a race where I like number 5, Combat Zone. I thought just deserved another chance after missing the break last time when Brett bet pretty hard. Third time as a gelding, third time off the layoff. I thought could get a good trip and be able to get a peak effort here for number 5, Combat Zone. Who did you like in Del Mar's 7th race?
And 7th, Pete, I like Cerulean. I think it's a color of blue, right? Is that what?
Cerulean, yep.
Mm-hmm. Last time out, I think she's really starting to connect the dots. You can see she's kind of hovering around. And the last time really put up a good number. She's got the same jockey. She's going the same distance. There's some consistency there. So I'm looking for him to get the job done here. Also,
Johnny Padres, the old Dodgers pitcher. Yes,
right. I think he's going to become running late. He lacks a lot of early speed, but I see a lot of contenders in here who potentially want to go out to the lead and could set up for him to close. So I like the number 3 as a B. So 8 and 3 for me in this race.
I like that point about Cerulean and the 8, and I like the outside speed trip a lot. So that one makes sense to me too. I am going to go ahead and stick with Combat Zone, and John makes a compelling case for the 3 and the 8 in race number 7. Let's talk about race number 8. We've got 3 and up Calbred maidens going 6.5 on the dirt. I'll throw this one back to you for your thoughts, John. Who's it going to be in leg 3 of this pick 4?
Now, this one was a little tough, Pete. I think it's going to be a war of attrition. Like, who's going to win out here? I couldn't see really a clear cut winner. The number 1 Starship Chewbacca is coming off of layoff, and he's put in a couple of good races. He was steady last time out from watching the replays. There on the turn, he had a great position and just got pinched in. So if he can get a clear run from the inside this time, I think he will definitely be a contender, as well as the number 7, Square Root. He's a little bit of a long shot for me in here, but I think he's got potential. There's Doug O'Neill. He's got a quick turn of foot early. Last time he went out a mile and just went too fast early, but looked the part, and I think the cut back to 6.5 should fit him quite nicely. So for me, the 1 and the 7, the last horse, that it's got a little bit of a seconditis, but again, we're talking about, you know, younger horses here, lightly raced, could be ready to do a little bit better and break their maiden. Brace for Impact, the number 3, is again just knocking on the door. Hasn't raced for quite a while, but for me would be a backup just in case he's got it together today.
That's who I came up with, number 3, Brace for Impact. I love the idea of spreading here, especially if Brace for Impact is the favorite. But I did think notably this was an easier group than the last several starts. And the work tab seems designed to get this horse the distance. It does have that natural speed. So the 3, Brace for Impact for me. John makes a compelling case for the 1, Starship Chewbacca. And is it the 7, Square Root?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And the 7, Square Root. That gets us through 3 legs of this pick 4 and brings us to our nightcap, race number 9. We've got a 3 and up $25,000 claimer going 1 mile and 1/16 for 3 and up this time around. I like Golden Donut in this spot. This one, I felt like maybe the sprint last time was more or less of a training exercise to get more speed into this one. And there's several back races that could fit well with this group, especially if Golden Donut does end up having some kind of pace advantage. I felt really good about this one, if anything like the 8-1 on the morning line appears. But I'll put the question to you, John. How are we going to get paid in this Del Mar Pick 4?
In this race piece, I like Colossi, the number 9. My angle here is that a repeat claimer for Mark Glatt, he had him before, claimed him off the dirt and immediately is bringing him back to the turf where he had him before. So with that angle, and then he's been very competitive, I think, and he's also getting Tyler Bays. Tyler won on him most recently with Mark Glatt. So that's the kind of angle that I'm going here with this one for number 9, I think, is how we'll get up to the tele windows.
And I like the other thing I like about Colossi a lot, like Golden Donut, the 5. I mean, I think they both project to be on or near in a race without much pace. So I like those two as partners in our horizontals here as we figure out how to get paid at Del Mar. What else you got cooking this weekend? What other tracks do you figure to be looking at? Any other action you're looking forward to?
The Big A, of course, take a look at Aqueduct. I haven't yet been able to crack the NHC contest. So I'm going to be participating in a couple contests this weekend. So we'll see what's in store. I don't think Horse Players has come out with the actual lineup yet, but I'll definitely be competing there, trying to get to the big dance this summer.
That's right. It's different this year. It's not the winter. The NHC, for those that don't know, is actually going to be run in the middle of the summer, but the event still closes at the end of December. So time is running out. What's your preference in turn? Now, you know, obviously you don't have the opportunity as a Texan to play in a lot of ADW online qualifying type deals. Do you typically just buy into online events? Do you look to feed and work your way up? How seriously do you take it, and what's your approach?
It really just depends on time, Pete. I've in years past, I've just sort of thrown money at feeders and trying to win it. And I'm like, these guys are really sharp. You know, you got to be on your game. So you've got to spend some time and do some handicapping. So I'm now to the point to where I'm just going to buy in, or, you know, put the money up to play in the contest to get in. There's one on Saturday and then one again on Sunday. So that's where I am now in my handicapping journey.
Well, we'd love to have you there. It was a hell of a year where you ended up in the top 15. The form of that year's In the Money finishers just keeps getting better and better, especially with Marshall Graham going on to win the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. His contention ran deep that year, and of course Matt Vagvolgi, who we spoke to earlier in the show, he was right up there, and that was Scott Coles' year, who folks know many times on here. There was, I don't know what was in the water, your NHC year, but we want to see you back there. And we know we're going to see you on these airwaves and hopefully over on InTheMoneyPodcast.com as well. Godspeed this weekend, John, and we look forward to speaking with you soon.
Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it.
Want to give a shout out to our friends at OldSmokeClothing.com. Easiest way to see our cool 4 t-shirts is to go to InTheMoneyPodcast.com/OldSmoke. And another cool thing, whatever you buy on the site, you can get free shipping if you use the promo code MONEY. Save yourself $5 that way. You can get our shirts. They got the badge of honor that comes with the $75 donation baked into the TRF, the chalk eating weasel, the degenerate horse player, and of course, our original I'm Alive in the Pick 5. Check it out today in themoneypodcast.com/oldsmoke. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the show. We'll do our quick round of thank yous. Drew Coatney, Matt Vagvolgi, and John Pinder. We'll thank producer Craig, DJ Unstable himself, Craig Gorbanoff. Been with us since the beginning here at In the Money. Actually, he's been with us even since the place with the letters, and we always appreciate his pushing all the right buttons. All our partners who you heard from earlier in the show, particularly Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation and 10 Strike Racing, speaking of Marshall Graham and Clay Sanders, big supporters of In the Money from day one. But most of all, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, the viewers, for making these shows so much fun to do. Whatever your questions about horse racing, handicapping, whatever you got, bourbon, hit us up, InTheMoneyPodcast.com. Reach out that way. Hit me up on Twitter, @LoomsBoldly. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos!